God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Anyone can use the chat function to send their phone numbers to the newcomer privately. Do we have any newcomers or people coming back? Don't see anyone. All right, BJ is going to read the preamble for us.
My name's BJ. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, BJ.
This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks.
Thanks, PJ. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9, part 2. Please welcome our panel this evening, John T. and Danny P. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Steps 8 and 9, part 2, page 80. The chances are that we have done domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around the nightclubs, or their equivalent, for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. So who would like to speak first, John or Danny?
It's quiet, so I guess I'll go ahead and start if that's all right.
Great, thanks, Danny.
Thank you. So, it's always difficult for, so first of all, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Danny. I'm not sure if I said that or not, but it's true. It's very true that I am an alcoholic. And it's always kind of difficult for me to talk about any single step, you know, kind of in a vacuum. So I'm going to touch base just a little bit about where we're at in this journey. I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing that because we're here talking about the ninth step and that's the topic. But, you know, at this point, you know, when I showed up to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know why I was doing all these things that you people were telling me to do, right? I didn't know, you know, what 11 of the 12 steps on the wall had to do with me not taking a drink today. I thought my problem was alcohol. I thought you guys were going to teach me either how not to drink or how to drink like a gentleman. But for a guy like me, I've got a physical allergy. When I put a drink in my body, I get more thirsty and I want to drink more, right? So the idea of me drinking like a gentleman is just never going to happen. I can take a look at my drinking experience and that is abundantly clear, right? And then when I try to quit drinking, I can't do that either. So I've got a problem that I can't solve, right? And if it was just a simple matter of putting the plug in the jug, I wouldn't need steps 2 through 12, right? There are plenty of people out there, we call them hard drinkers, that are completely capable of doing that. And they don't need Alcoholics Anonymous, right? So I show up here with a problem that I can't solve. And for me, it's as simple as this, right? I had a problem I couldn't solve. I saw it was solved in other people. So I took the action that they said that they took that you know, took care of that problem for them. And what that involves is getting rid of that selfishness and self-centeredness so that I can get a relationship going with God that's going to solve my problem. And you know, some of that's mental, some of that's actual physical things that I've done. And I address those in steps 4 through 9. Right. So steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, I'm taking a mental list, you know, my inventory of my defects as well as my character assets. And then I'm giving those to God. So I'm kind of addressing the mental portion there. But I've done some actual physical things wrong, and I need to go to these people and tell them that I was wrong. Right. And that's not a comfortable thing for me to do. I've told a ton of people that I was sorry before, but that's not what I'm doing here. I'm going to them and telling them that I was wrong. I got sober when I was 20 years old. I didn't have a wife, but I had plenty of women that I had not treated well, right? And to be completely honest with you, I thought when I got sober and I looked at the 9th step, like some of those were the ones that I was excited to go out and make, right? I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna patch things up with her and patch things up with her. And I'm really glad that I had a sponsor that saw right through all of my BS. I'm gonna try not to use profanity. I can't guarantee that I won't let something slip by, but I'm gonna try my best. You know what it says in step 9, made direct amends except when to do so would injure them or others, right? Most of those people in my experience, I was going to do more harm than good just showing back up in their life, right? I probably wasn't that important of a person in their life. And I, you know, I'm completely willing if they end up showing up in my life to sit down and have that conversation and tell them exactly where I was wrong and see what I can do to fix that damage that I had done. But this is talking about a little bit of a different situation. You know, this is talking about somebody that I'm married to or somebody that I have, you know, a longstanding relationship with. And that's a little bit different. That is something that has damage done that absolutely needs to be repaired, right? And so I need to go to these people and you know, I get to sponsor people that didn't get sober when they were 20 and have wives and have ex-wives and have, you know, children that have mothers that they have not treated right. And when you have a common interest like that, they're still in your life, right? The best thing that I could do for most of the women that were in my life is stay the hell away from them because I did nothing except for cause harm. And going to them would do nothing except drudge up the past that isn't needed. But with those longstanding domestic relations, you know, I've you know, talked with several of the guys that I've had the opportunity of taking through the steps and had those conversations beforehand. You know, what do I disclose? What do I not disclose? And the general rule is, you know, be as transparent as you can and as honest as you possibly can without hurting somebody else, right? There are other people involved in this. You know, the girl that understands, she doesn't need, you know, my sponsee's wife coming after her and slashing her tires or anything of that nature. So when I'm having these conversations with guys that I sponsor, those are kind of the things that we're looking at. You know, we want to be as transparent as we can. We want to be as open and honest as we can, but we have to be mindful that other people are involved and we can't bring them into the fold with that. And I wanted to touch real quick on, it's actually when it's talking about doing a 5th step, but I think the principle holds true when you're talking about 8th and 9th step as well. On page 74, it says, the rule is we're hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. And that principle is something that I need to bring into these, you know, 8th and 9th step activities that I'm doing is always be considerate of others. So that means not just the person that I'm making that direct amends to, but also other people that may be impacted by that. And that's all I've got on this one. So thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Danny. Okay, John.
There we go. Okay. Well, thanks for having me here. Real pleasure to do some 12-step type work. My name is John. I am a grateful recovered alcoholic. this is kind of odd because my sponsor, Vinny, which I'm sure most of you know, We had just gone over this the other week, and we were, you know, tearing it apart and turning the things into questions. And he would read to me what he had done, and I read to him what I had done. And even though there were spots that were the same, some were very different, and it was really enlightening. And it's really great to do things in that manner. As far as that particular passage, my wife and I got started very late in our marriage and life drinking. And we also, we drank, and then we stopped close to the same time. She got to AA before I did. She got to BBA before I did, all that. Anyway, there was no infidelity or anything like that going on, but there was a lot of hard times, and there were amends that needed to be made. Now, as far as the eighth step, I'll just try to recap briefly what that was like for me. I had gone through the steps several times before going through in this manner, and it really was not very good. You know, it was like a very quick thing. My sponsors at the time did the best that they knew how, but I always felt that there was something more. So that when I got to this process, there was quite a deep dive into it. And my suggestion for people, from my experience and the experience of people I know, first pray a lot. When you're making that list, pray a lot. I prayed a lot, and the people that need the amends definitely came to me in a form of like a nagging thought, because at first I didn't really think I needed to make amends to those people. But after a while, I felt I did need to make an amends to those people. I had made a number of amends before then. And the big book and the steps, for the most part, it's not a one and done deal. It's not like we go through the first and the second, whatever, and we just forget about them. However, when it comes to amends, when we make an amends, that's basically it. My wife, I did have to make an amends to a second time, because there was quite a bit extra that I had to add on. But it's something, once I made the amends, that was it. So I didn't have a big list, but of the list I did have, a number of them had passed. Some I had no idea where they got to, and others I had to do a little searching for. There was one case where I really didn't know if I did need to make an amends. And this is where the importance of a good sponsor comes in, because he wanted to go through the list of people that I had. And as I was listening to Dan Sherman, his step 8 and 9, and he said, we want to weed out the goofy amends. That's the way he ordered it. Goofy amends. They're really not amends that needed to be made. He also drew the distinction between an amends and apology. An apology is not taking really responsible for anything. It's like if you back into somebody's fence with your car and you say, well, I'm sorry, and that's the end of it, that's an apology. An amends would be, I'm sorry, but I'm going to replace your fence. I'm going to restore it back to what it was to the best of my ability. So I had a couple people that had passed, and in speaking to my sponsor, being creative, one had passed, and he wasn't buried, he was cremated. So after wondering about it, what I did is I got a fire pit, and in front of that, I said a prayer and made my amends to this person. Another person was a computer geek. I don't know if he was cremated or buried or whatever, But he was suggested to me that I go in front of my computer, find some nice meditation music, and make my amends there. Another case, there was a person I could not find his address or where he was, no matter how I looked. And I did leave a message with somebody who saw him very rarely that if he did see me, give me a call. But what I did there under suggestion is I got a balloon, one of these helium balloons, and I tied a note to it with my apology, and I let it go into the away. It's kind of funny too, because at the time I let it go, it was like a storm going, and it was kind of appropriate given the relationship we had had. It was just a few things that few experiences I had with my step nine. There is a good deal to do with these, and I can now stand before you saying I have made all my amends, and I feel very comfortable about that. But I know that if anything pops up, if my higher power reveals to me that there's something that I forgot, I will address that, and I'm totally willing to address it as if and when they come up. So with that, I think that's about all I have for that subject. So thanks again for letting me speak tonight, and turn it back to the host.
Thanks, John. Okay, so our second reading is on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we can hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly, he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patient mothers wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Okay, Danny, we'll let you go first again.
That's probably what you just read, probably my favorite line in the literature that we have that talks about step nine, you know, because that's exactly what I want to do is say, you know, I'm sober now. Look at how awesome I am. You know, I know I was just this tornado roaring through your life, but isn't it great that the storm's over now? Isn't that enough, right? And I want a pat on the back, and I want everybody to see how great I am. But you know, the alcoholism normally results in a lot of things that I've done that have legitimately harmed other people, right? So it, again, back to the whole purpose of the steps is I'm doing this to get a relationship with God that's going to solve my problem, right? So I've got all this selfishness, and I've got all these physical actions that are manifestation of self that have resulted in other people being legitimately harmed. You know, sometimes it's money, sometimes it's relationships, sometimes it's just me being, you know, rude and not a nice person and hurting people's feelings. You know, it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. But I can't just show up to Alcoholics Anonymous, stop drinking, expect to stay sober, and never make right any of those wrongs. You know, it says that we're making direct amends to such people wherever possible. Obviously, there are going to be situations where that's not possible. But most of the time, in my experience, a direct amends is possible. And what that looks like is approaching somebody and going to them and telling them exactly how I see it, what I did that was wrong, right? And then asking them, what else did I do that was wrong? Because that's probably for me the most enlightening piece, right? Because I see my truth, and my truth kind of changes as I go throughout this process, and I go through some self-discovery, and God shows things to me that were, you know, that I wasn't able to see at a certain point. And a huge part of that is during these amends, I have, you know, there were people that I went to, and when I get to that portion of the amends and ask them, you know, what else that I did that was wrong, they come up with things that I just completely blanked on. I never even thought of, because I'm so consumed with self that, you know, I'm always the first thing on my mind. I'm always on the forefront of my concerns. And a lot of the times when I go and make these amends and ask them that question, the things that I had done that were legitimately, objectively wrong were absolutely the smallest concern to them. And what had really hurt them more is, you know, how it impacted other people, right? So I make a fool of myself in front of somebody, I steal some money or I break something. And what my brain naturally thinks that I did wrong is, oh, I need to replace that thing that I broke, right? Or I need to pay back the money. But more often than not, what in my experience, what people find more important is, you know, how that interacts with their relationships. You know, I completely embarrassed you in front of your mother, in front of your friends, in front of whatever. And I completely don't think of that naturally myself. So if I'm not doing that, if I'm not making that direct amends and asking that question, what else did I do? I'm completely missing that piece of the puzzle. And that's an immensely important portion of that. And, you know, I don't know. Well, I was sober down in Norfolk for a while, so I can say that at least when I was down there years ago, I heard people talking about it in meetings. But the idea of making a living amends to somebody. Now, don't get me wrong. Like if somebody's passed away and I write them a letter or go to their grave and talk to them as best I can through my higher power, that may be the best I can do to make that direct amends. But I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, making a living amends in lieu of making that direct amends, right? And to me, I've never seen anywhere in the big book where it talks about making a living amends, right? That's just part of being a responsible human and living part of this path and part of step 12, part two, which is, you know, continue to practice these principles in all of our affairs, right? The things that I was doing that was wrong, I need to stop doing those regardless of whether I'm calling that a living amends or not, because that's the person that I'm trying to be today, right? And a living amends to me doesn't exist, right? That's just part of living this way of life one day at a time. If that person is still living and breathing and it's not going to cause harm to them or others, and let me tell you, I don't believe that I include myself as in others. Again, it says the rule is we're always hard on ourselves, but considerate of others. I don't think it would say we're hard on ourselves if it meant I needed to make an amends to myself by not making an amends. I've heard people say that. I've never seen it in the book. I don't understand where that comes from. If your sponsor is telling you that, you might want to touch base with somebody that has been through the steps out of the book and reads the black part of the literature. Because for me, that's the directions that tells me how to not get drunk and not kill myself. Because left to my own volition, you know, that's what I'm going to do, right? So, you know, it's simply not enough for me to simply show up here and expect. So there's two parts of that, right? One, it's not right because I've done wrong to other people that needs to be set right. And secondly, I can't stay sober. I can't get access to that power greater than myself that's going to solve my problem if I don't go out and do these things, right? That's all I got. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. That was great. Okay, John.
Hi. Yeah, this is a really good passage. It's got a couple of different aspects to it to me. The first is the analogy of having the farmer come out from the hurricane cellar or whatever and saying, ain't it great the wind stopped blowing even though everything's destroyed? First thing is there's no responsibility there. After the person has done a lot of damage, he does need to, or they do need to make some kind of effort to to restore things back to what they were before, which is the amends process. As far as a living amends, I was listening to Tyler the other day, her take on 8 and 9, and somebody had asked that question, and she says, that comes maybe after you made the amends, the physical amends, and then you show that you're sorry by living in a manner that would show you're repentant for what you had done. But as far as just looking at as a way to take a shortcut of not having to do something unpleasant, that does not fly. That's not going to do the person you have harmed any good, and it's not going to do yourself any good. That's been my experience. As far as making amends, it brings out a couple things as far as taking the easy ones first and saving the harder ones for later. Funny part about it is sometimes you really don't know which ones are going to be easy and which ones are going to be hard. There was one case where I was working with a guy some 25 years ago or something, and we used to cross swords a little bit at work because of various situations. Anyway, I did find out, tracked him down, and I did call him, and I said, look, I'd like to, apologize and, make an amends for when we were working together. I acted like pretty much an ass, I really did this, that, and the other. And basically says, well, John, he says, I did just about the same to you. I thought we were pretty equal on that score. And it wound up to be the most pleasant conversation. He invited me over to the place that he was working, where I used to work. It was a great conversation. So that was the one I thought would be kind of difficult. And then it wound up to my daughter, which because she was ill, it took a long time getting to her. But I thought, okay, I had done that one a while ago. That went really easy. But this one was more in depth, and it turned out to be the hardest one because she had brought out some things that I had done out of being selfish and self-centered and everything else. And that one, that was tough. That was really tough. But, it was done, and I'm glad I did it. I says, I did ask the right questions. Is there anything more? And finished up with, is there anything I could do to make up for this? And she basically said no, but still. So there are some surprises when it comes to an amends. The idea of cards that they use in this process is very good because it is very good. As I brought out the beginning, prayer is very important to me, is to take these cards, look at them with a prayer, and being a quiet time and meditation. It was suggested to me, light a candle, have some meditation music on, look at the cards, pray on them, and see what comes to you. And that works. It worked for me, and it worked for other people. So there's a lot of information in the big book as far as instructions of how to do this. And as it brought out, a living men's ain't one of them. That's about all I have for that. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay, we're going to go on to our third reading, which is on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Danny.
Is that that next paragraph part of it as well? The spiritual life is.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. Let me read that. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. Okay, now you can go.
Thank you. A long period of reconstruction ahead. And you know, sometimes that's more true for some of us than for others. I recently, I think just a week or two ago, went through a guy's 8-step list with him. That was about the longest that I've seen. I think he had 87 amends that he needed to make, which, you know, I'm sure that there are longer out there, but that's pretty substantial, right? And what I always tell my guys, and the way that I had to look at it myself, is that, you know, how do you eat an elephant? That's what I always ask them. You know, you just do it one bite at a time. And I think it's important to remember that I'm not, you know, stuck on my 9th step until I'm done with every single one of these amends, right? I move on to 10, 11, and 12, and I continue. You know, it says on the next page, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any mistakes as we go along, right? So I commence this way of living. That doesn't mean that I get stuck at step 8.5 and make a couple of amends and then rest on my laurels. I need to continue to be diligent about this. And I'll be completely honest, I was not, right? And I had a lot of misery that I completely believe was fully refundable and was, you know, nothing except a matter of me being lazy that resulted in that. And I got to this point in the book. I made, you know, 5-6 amends, enough that I had a few stories that I could feel like I was a part of in meetings when 9th step was brought up. And then I kind of stopped doing everything, you know. The vast majority of my amends were in Ohio. I was living in Virginia. So there was a little bit of a distance barrier that was. I don't use that as an excuse today. I should have done what it took to get there. Because like I said, I had a lot of misery that I completely believe was refundable, that was only a result of me not taking action early on, right? I moved to Richmond when I was about 5 years sober. I'd made probably about 10 or 12 amends out of a list of probably about 60 or 70. And what happened was my untreated alcoholism started creeping back in, right? I believe that I did enough to get a relationship going with God to where he had mercy on my soul and kept me physically sober. But that selfishness, that self-centeredness, those bedevilments that it talks about started creeping back in, right? I was, you know, 5 or 6 years completely abstinent of any mind-altering chemical, and I was miserable, right? And I got to a place where I was talking with my sponsor, and we were talking about amends, and I was like, yeah, there are some that I really need to make. So I took a couple of days off work. I drove back to Ohio, and I made a couple of the really big ones that had really been eating at me for years and years. I went to my employer and told him that I stole from him. You know, I knocked on a guy's door and told him that I threw a rock through his window. You know, I a couple of those that had really been, that I knew that were constantly on my mind, right? And there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. And the part that I have control in that is how many approaches that I'm making. So when I sponsor guys today, you know, it doesn't talk about it in the big book, and it's just semantics, but it seems like it is easier to me to refer to those as approaches. So there's in my experience, there's 5 parts to an amends, right? So the first one is that approach, and I'm making that approach on that person's terms, right? So if it's, you know, somebody that I have their phone number, maybe I give them a call, shoot them a text, and I'm scheduling an appointment. That's what the approach is about, right? Now there are certain people in my life that, you know, friends, family, that God might put them there where an organic situation pops up and God lets me know that it's time to make that amends. And that's fantastic. But for the vast majority of these, I'm setting an appointment and making an approach, right? And I'm letting them know, like, hey, there's some things that I did that haven't sat right with me. I'd like to sit down and touch base with you. Is there a time when you have an opportunity to do that? Right. So I'm not springing this on people. I'm letting them know kind of what the conversation is about. But I'm giving them the opportunity to say no. Right. Because it's my job to make that amends and make that approach. But I'm not forcing myself on somebody. Right. That idea that it's something that I need to do is absolutely true. But I need to do it on their terms. Right. And that just goes with the same theme that's throughout the entire steps of getting away from that selfishness and self-centeredness. So that's the first thing that I'm doing is I'm making an approach and setting that appointment. The second thing would be that I'm telling them what I did that was wrong. And I've already touched base on that, so I won't anymore. And then I ask them what else I did that was wrong. And then I ask them what I can do to make that right. And the fifth and final thing that I do is I thank them for the opportunity. Right. Because they're really giving me a gift. They don't owe me anything. I've done them harm. Right. They don't owe me time. They don't owe me attention. They don't owe me anything, any of that. So that's the fifth and final thing that I do is ask that, you know, thank them for the time that they gave me. And it says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And that's day by day. If, you know, and 2 pages from now on page 85, it talks about resting on our laurels. And that's exactly what I did for a long time. And what it resulted in is, like I said, a lot of misery that was mine for the taking, but I didn't have to have if I was willing to do the work. And, you know, it talks about not talking incessantly about spiritual matters and our behavior will convince them more than our words. You know, 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. How many people have I apologized to? Dozens, hundreds of times. You know, those people that have been in my life for my entire life, my brother, my mom, my dad, my sister. How many times have they heard me say, I'm sorry and I'm going to do better? Right. So when I approach them, it's a different conversation that we're having. I'm not telling them that I'm sorry. I'm telling them that I did wrong. Right? This is what I did that was wrong. And, you know, even though the conversation is, its tone has changed a little bit, that doesn't mean that they're automatically going to think that I'm going to be an upstanding citizen and everything's going to be good from here on out. They've got a lot of prior experience with me that shows that I'm not necessarily a reliable person. Right. So I've got to show them by my actions. And those actions are 10, 11 and 12. Right. I'm going to still do things that are wrong. I try not to. But when I do, I take ownership for that. Right. I ask God to show me throughout the day how I can be helpful. And that includes all the people in my life. Right. And I try to bring that attitude of how I can be helpful to each and every individual in my daily life. And I don't do that perfect. I'm not sitting here preaching to you, saying that I do things perfectly. I had to make an amends to my girlfriend or apologize to her literally about 3 minutes before this meeting started. Right. So I set right those mistakes as I go along. So thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Danny. Okay, John.
Okay, here we are. Okay, yeah, I just remembered in all this about sobriety, and that sobriety is not an end, an end thing. It is but a beginning for us. The whole purpose of the book is to have a plan for living our lives, and it brings out on that last passage about reconstruction. Now, I've been in the building trades for a number of years, and to me that means reconstruction means having to build back something that had been torn down. It did a lot of damage before drinking, in my case, even before I was drinking. We can damage things. I know I can have damaged things long before I started my drinking career. And that needed to be that needed to be addressed, as well as when I was drinking or during the time I was drinking. So this is something that, and I remember specifically one amends I had to make. I had been in partnership with a guy in business for a number of years. And there's a lot of times we got along pretty well, but there are times that we had differences of opinion, and he wanted to do his things his way. I wanted to do things my way. In retrospect, his methods or his way of doing things would have been better for the business than mine, but the business ended very badly. There was a lot of bitterness and there was a lot of resentments going on. Anyway, not this last time, but the time before I had done the steps, I had seen him in town, the town that I worked at. And I said to myself, I prayed and I said, look, if you want God, if you want me to make this amends, put him in my eyesight and I'll go get him, basically. Sure enough, he was across the street one day working at a job. And, I went up to him, say, hey, Bob, you have a minute? I'd like to talk to you a few things. And I gave him a thorough amends. And I did not bring up a single thing that he had done to me. It was strictly everything I had done improperly in our relationship. And he said, thank you, John. I've been waiting years for you to hear you say that. And do you think the bugger would apologize for anything he did? No, but that was okay because I felt so good. I felt released. I know he felt released. And that was the way I really feel an amends should have gone. And that was really an experience. There are other things, a period of reconstruction. Also, I know that I am imperfect. And even though I make an amends for some wrongdoings, it's not going to mean that I never make any mistakes along those same lines again. I've made an amends to people for things that I had done, actions I had done, attitudes, the way I behaved. And damned if I didn't do the same thing again, over and over again, because of my selfishness, self-centeredness, all that other stuff. And it is true, this is where it has to be in all our affairs every day, something that requires constant monitoring on my part, constant prayer to show me the way, constant prayer to not harm anybody with my words, thoughts, or actions. And I pray that I might be somebody who helps a person through their day, and also that through me, God's love for them can be seen. So this is a process. It's not definitely something that is one and done as far as living our lives. I feel that I have to constantly be on guard for myself, because I do know that although I've been relieved of, I have recovered from a seeming hopeless malady of mind and body, my spiritual malady is still there, and my will never catch up with my spiritual malady. It just beat me every time. So I have to definitely every day work on these things, be very vigilant. And time takes time, they say. So that's about all I have on that. So thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay, our next reading is still on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Danny?
I love that last little bit. You know, we, as God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. You know, alcoholism makes me a sick person, right? You know, I learned to look at my four step a little bit differently than I initially thought about it going in. You know, I'm not a bad person trying to get good. I'm a sick person trying to get well. You know, so I'm one of God's children just as much as anybody else. And so when I'm going to these people and setting right these wrongs, I'm acknowledging that I've done something wrong and I need to do what I can to set that right. But I'm not going before them, begging, pleading, asking, anything of that nature. I'm going there, I'm making the approach as best I can, and I'm setting things right the best that I can. And you know, when it says here that some people cannot be seen, we send them an honest letter if we can. You know, for me, some of those approaches that I try to make and people don't reciprocate, I've got two of them on my list now. And those are the only two, there are three where I've made that approach and they haven't reciprocated, right? Haven't responded. And that's okay, right? I've done my part. I'm completely 100% willing. If God puts that person in my life, I will at the drop of the hat make that amends. But I'm not forcing myself upon anybody, right? And, you know, some people can't be seen, like, you know, like I referenced earlier, my grandmother had passed away before I got sober, right? I still had done some things that were wrong and I needed to make as direct of amends as I possibly could. But obviously I can't go and sit down with her and have a conversation. She's not here anymore. That doesn't mean that I didn't do anything wrong. And I have, you know, I didn't have a financial amends to my grandmother. It wasn't anything financial that I had done wrong. But I have people that have that situation pop up frequently. You know, they'd stolen from somebody that had passed away. And there are a couple of ways to address that. Well, first of all, my understanding is that we want to be as direct as we possibly can. When the direct option is removed, then I take the next most direct option that I can. So with somebody that's passed away, what that looks like, if I owe a financial amends, who did I really steal from? Who inherited their estate, right? So that's going to be my next option. If that option isn't available, then what's a cause that that person felt strongly about? Can I find a 501c3, a nonprofit that's aligned with something that person thought and felt very strongly about, right? There are different ways that we can get creative as needed, but particularly with the financial amends, it's not my money, right? If I've stolen it or acquired it in a way that it is not legal or ethical, it's not my money in the first place. It's money that I took unlawfully. You know, I referenced guy whose door I knocked on after throwing a window in his house. And that was just a random act of violence, right? That didn't pop up on my fourth step. I wasn't resentful at that guy at all. I got drunk. We ran out of booze. We were running around vandalizing things because we were bored and we were asshole kids. Like, that's what we were doing. And I ended up finding out, you know, whose house that was. It was a kid that I went to school with. So I ended up, you know, I had done something wrong, no resentment in correlation with it, but it's absolutely an amends that I need to make. And I knocked on that guy's house, absolutely paralyzed with fear. But I was willing to do what needed to be done because I was in pain, right? And I had that conversation and that amends absolutely floored me. That guy was relieved that it was just a drunk kid doing something dumb. He thought for years and years, that I guess he was a little league baseball coach and he thought it was one of his kids for, you know, not starting him or something like that. And he was relieved just to hear that it was a random act of violence and he wouldn't physically take any money from me. So I touched base with my sponsor on that and I knew about how much it costs to replace that window. And even though he wouldn't accept it, you know, outright from me at his front door, that's his money that he had incurred an expense that that he wouldn't have had other than my behavior. So I just got an Amazon gift card and had it sent to him anonymously, right? There are different creative ways that we can go about making these amends when somebody either won't see us or when we can't fully set those things right. Because that's not my money, right? All those financial amends, I looked at it for years as this is my money that I've got to give away to gain access to God. And that's not the case. It was never my money in the first place. I know that didn't talk about financial at all. Somehow I got on that train. So I hope that's all right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Danny. Okay, John.
Okay. Good job, Danny. There's a lot of creative ways we can go about doing things. Yeah, I had also heard of finding some organization or charity that the person cares about and then making a donation in their name. There's just so many ways that we can do things. What else is there to say? It's so important to live a spiritual life and to not rest on our laurels and make spiritual progress. And it's such important work to do. I know there's a lot of people out there that try to minimize things, that they try to find excuses for not doing the work and trying to minimize the importance of the work. One person I remember at a meeting was saying, well, I knew a guy 30 years and he sponsored people and he knew the big book and he went to meetings, he did this, and darned if he didn't drink, and I'd give $1 million to find out why. And the person who was running the meeting says, if I tell you, could you give me $1 million? And then she says, he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. I'm being attacked here by this dog. Little love dog. There's not too much more I can add. Danny really summed it up very nicely in that last passage. So that's about all I got for there.
Thanks, John. I love the dog. Okay. So I'm going to read the last reading. And then if I can get you guys just to like maybe say one sentence, because we're running out of time. So on page 83, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Danny?
I'll try to be as brief as I can. That's not my strong suit. Any of these promises that we have in the book, you know, it's absolutely a miracle what we have in sobriety and the release and the freedom that we get. But it's like spiritual physics, you know, if I do this, I get this, right? And if I look at each one of these, like the sheer actions that I'm taking by humbling myself and setting these matters straight, that's what enacts these promises to be able to come true, right? I'm no longer afraid of financial insecurity because I've called my creditors and I've made arrangements to pay them, whether I've paid them all at once. Like each one of those you can look through and that's there. And then the last thing I'll say and shut up is like I said, it's an if-then statement, right? I get these things if I'm painstaking about this phase of our development. And these are the ninth step promises, right? These don't come true if I'm painstaking about sitting my butt in a meeting for an hour a day, every single day, and making 90 meetings in 90 days. These things, the painstaking it's talking about is making those approaches, making those amends, setting matters straight. That's all I got.
Thanks, Danny. Hey, John.
Okay. I remember several months ago, my sponsor having sent me a list. And on one side of the list, it listed the bedevilments. And on the other side, it listed those nine-step promises, how they show the fulfillment of when the bedevilments are minimized, then the blessings come about. I wish I would have had that to bring up. It was really very nice. The message is of such hope that I know it helps me get through each day feeling good that there is a higher power who cherishes me, cherishes all of us. And when I look at other people, instead of trying to take their inventory, which kind of comes naturally, I try to look at them as another one of God's creatures whom he loves and cherishes just as much as me. And that can change my attitude right around very quickly. So that's about all I got for that. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Okay, so that's the end of our speaker portion. Let's give them a hand. The seventh tradition, my co-host is going to put up the QR code and the Venmo PayPal link. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees, encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. I have one announcement and then I'll take others. Simple Actions is going back in person. We're gonna have a hybrid meeting. So our supper and our speaker will be our first in-person meeting back, and that's gonna be May 9th at 6 p.m. is supper. So please bring a dish to share if you would like to. And at 7, our speaker is gonna be Chris W. And our location is going to be Ghent United Methodist Church on Raleigh Avenue. Do we have any other announcements? Just go ahead and unmute and share if you have one. Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Okay, and again, we're gonna thank the panel for sharing. You guys were rock stars. And I love the cats that Danny had and the dog that John had. They were entertaining me. Okay, so thanks to all who participated. Let's unmute and we'll say the Lord's Prayer and a chance for everyone to say thank you to the speakers. So, ready? Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come,
thy will be done,
as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread,
and forgive us our trespasses, and lead us not into temptation,
deliver
us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, the power,
and the glory,
forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Danny. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, John. Awesome meeting.
That was awesome.